Welcome to the Georgia FinTech Academy podcast. The Georgia FinTech Academy is a collaboration between Georgia's fintech industry and the University System of Georgia. This talent development initiative addresses a massive demand for fintech professionals and gives learners the specialized education experiences needed to enter the fintech sector.
Hello, everybody. This is Tommy Marshall. Welcome to episode 15 of the Georgia FinTech Academy podcast. Today, I am excited to have Elizabeth McQuarrie with us from Glenbrook Partners and Michael Olajide, a student of Georgia State's Robinson College of Business. Welcome to you both.
Hey, Tommy.
Hey, Tommy. Great to be here. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Elizabeth. How are you guys doing today?
Doing great on June 25th. I can't believe it's been, I think we're like 110 days into this public health crisis. I'm going crazy, stir crazy being at home for so much time. Wanted to get things started off and letting our listeners get to know you, Elizabeth. Tell us about you. Tell us about your history in financial services and fintech. Tell us about Glenbrook. The more the better.
Well, thanks for having me, Tommy, and it's great to be here and have this opportunity to reach out. And, you know, in some ways, I'm just realizing that my sort of intersection with the world of payments, even though I focus on global payments, it actually started right here in Atlanta. And I was at the Federal Reserve Bank of Atlanta in the research department, started the year after the Olympics, so 97, and did the financial analyst activities there, economic analyst, I think it was called, and focused on Latin America and sort of public policy and economic policy, because there's so many intersections between the Latin American economies and the Southeast. Of course, the Atlanta Fed is the takes oversight of the six states here in the Southeast. And there was an opportunity to work with somebody in payments, retail payments, ACH, who was trying to build out connections to other countries with the ACH. So there was a need to connect to Mexico. And I think they reached out to me because I spoke Spanish. So I was in the right place, at least having some language skills. And I got to know the person that was doing the project. And then they actually advertised for a job, and I applied. I don't know if I was truly the most qualified, but I was the most available, perhaps. And so that was my journey. Started about 2002. In payments, and kind of jumped into the deep end of the pool, but did it in a place that was really great to learn. You know, so many great people at the Federal Reserve here in Atlanta, and are connected to the payments team nationally here. So payments is not a local function in the 6th District. It is a national function that the folks carry out, and retail payments is checks and ACH that they lead here in Atlanta. And so I very much started learning about ACH and cross-border payments, and I stayed with that for about 10 years, and we built the cross-border ACH out from, I think it was 4 or 5 countries when I started, to over 30 when we finished. That program's still in place today. And a lot of government payments go over that, you know, Social Security and other government payments to countries around the world. Mm-hmm. Then I thought,
The Atlanta Fed's been a great partner to the Georgia FinTech Academy. In fact, Claire Green and I were just corresponding the other day about her, you know, that big payments forum study panel that she handles, that retail panel that has just been, critical in terms of information across the financial system. And then then another thing I just wanted to mention was the Rafael Bostic, the current president of the Atlanta Fed, wrote a remarkable essay on systematic racism and its impact on our economy that I learned a lot from, and I've been sharing that broadly, and I hope all our listeners will take a moment to search that up on the Atlanta Fed website. And he's also done some interviews in the past week on national media. The one that I listened to was on Marketplace with Kai Rizdahl, where he was emphasizing the points that he was making in the essay. Great example of just amazing leadership that the Federal Reserve of Atlanta here has provided across the entire system. But go on. I cut you off. Tell us about Glenbrook.
No, absolutely. You couldn't have better partners than the Atlanta Fed all across the board. And it is inspirational and gives us the hope that we may be able to make some of the changes that are needed in our economy to go forward. And of course, the Fed is in a good position to do that with its private sector partners. But yeah, so, you know, the Fed's a great place to work. But I kind of said to myself, if I don't leave soon, I'll probably get very comfortable here and, you know, be too old to venture out. So I pushed myself out the door and went to a money transmitter for a little bit. And it didn't work out for different reasons, as these things go. But I was lucky enough to, during that period, to have met some folks at Glenbrook Partners, where I've now been for 8 or 9 years. And I still live here in Atlanta, but Glenbrook's headquartered in San Francisco. It's a payments consulting firm, a payment strategy and consulting. Really very deep in the payment space, because that's all Glenbrook focuses on is different aspects of the payment system. And I've been lucky enough to have some great partners there. And we have really built out opportunities and I think great partnerships in doing things on some global payment basis. And that's taken us to do some work in Africa, some work in Latin America, a little bit in Asia. Of course, the firm has some specializations in with Europe as well. So, and couldn't be at a better time because there's so much innovation going on globally that if we're not paying attention to what's happening in other parts of the world, then we're missing out. So it's a great time to be in payments.
I was showing the payment systems in the U.S. book, Michael, as we were prepping, which, Michael, I assume you haven't read yet, but I know you will read.
Oh, yeah.
It's in its third edition. And I, you know, Elizabeth, I don't know if I told you, but when I was creating the payments practice at Capco earlier in my career, I would recommend that all my consultants read this book before they went on an engagement so that they, you know, would at least be able to have a better chance of giving some great advice to our clients. But it's been a great contribution, I think, to the industry. This book has been really helpful. And then, you know, recently, I know one of the authors here is Russ Jones, and I've had a chance to get to know him a little bit better recently, which I've appreciated. Thank you again for that introduction. But Michael, tell us about you.
Absolutely. I'd love to. All right. So my name is Michael Olajide. I am currently a senior at the J. Mac Robinson College of Business at Georgia State University, graduating this December with a Bachelor of Business Administration in Computer Information Systems. Right now, I currently serve as an intern for Amazon as a business intelligence engineer and the Alexa AI team. When I'm not doing that, I'm also the president of the Georgia State chapter of the Association for Information Systems. For me, fintech was always interesting because I just always saw opportunities for providing economic value to overlooked countries. And I always loved to be of service. So I thought that was one of the best ways I could do it.
What do you ask Alexa most often?
Okay, so I have a shower playlist that I always use. So I just ask Alexa to always play that. Because I always just play 7 songs. So I'm just like, all right, Alexa, just make that into a playlist. Play that.
That's cool. Tommy,
I'm sorry. We have to know what you most often ask Alexa.
Well, you know, more often I've been using Alexa, the announcement feature. Are you familiar with this feature? You can say, Alexa, announce dinner's ready. And so, like, I've got 3 kids, all 16 and under, and they each have one of those, the Echo, the small ones, little disc.
Echo Dots?
Yeah, the Dots. Exactly. Thanks. So they each have one in their room. So I can, and it drives me crazy when my kids are not promptly showing up for dinner time. And so I'll get the Alexa announcement thing. I'll say, Alexa, I'll be nice. I'll be like, Alexa, announce that dinner is ready. And then Alexa announces in all the rooms. And then if they don't show up within like 2 minutes, I start to like escalate the tone of the announcement. So that's been my favorite. I just discovered this feature, a few weeks ago. So it's been very helpful recently. So
I love that.
That's a good one. I was just reading that Amazon is expanding its presence in South Africa, and they're hiring like 1,000 people largely to work on the Alexa rollout into Europe as well as, Africa.
Cool. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Amazon's doing a crazy amount of expansion in the past few months.
But that's neat, Michael. I'm glad you're doing that internship. And it's been exciting to get you involved with the Georgia FinTech Academy. And thanks for volunteering to be part of the Student Advisory Council. And
for having me.
I'm looking forward to seeing where things go here as you start to move towards graduation in December. So if you're listening to this show and you're looking for a real rock star to join your company, you should reach out to me and I'll get you connected to Michael.
I try my best.
Well, Michael, Amazon has, a global caliber payments team.
Yeah.
We'll have to get that payments book and then you can start talking to those guys too.
I definitely need to get that. So what would be a high-level overview for payment systems in the U.S.?
What do you mean? You want me to read the credible contents?
just we have a high-level overview.
Well, let's look at it from an Amazon perspective, right?
All right.
They're basically an e-commerce retailer, right? But they need to take money from their customers. Of course, they have many other things that they do. But from a payments perspective, I suspect that's the biggest one. So they have to figure out all the ways to accept payments from their customers, largely credit and debit cards. But they're one of the early acceptors of ACH payments online. So that's pretty unusual. So ACH, you might know it as direct deposit. How does Amazon pay you? Let's ask that question.
Direct deposit.
yeah. So that's ACH, which is automated clearinghouse. And that, coincidentally, is one of the payments functions that is coordinated for the Federal Reserve, one of the nation's largest providers of financial services to banks and credit unions. That's coordinated right there on 10th and Peachtree.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right here in Atlanta.
That's every day.
Absolutely. So when you get the book, because I'll certainly send you one, you'll learn about those You'll learn about those core payment systems, and you'll also learn how, and, you know, theoretically, how companies like Amazon innovate off of these existing payment systems.
But I'm looking at my cheat sheet, Elizabeth, from the digital payments bootcamp. And so, Michael, there's kind of six core payment systems. Cards.
All right.
Cards. So that's like credit cards, debit cards. ACH, which Elizabeth's a super duper expert on. And ACH stands for Automated Clearing House. Checks. Have you ever written a check, Michael?
Oh, yeah. Oh, as soon as I was able to, I just started writing checks.
Checks, cash, wires, which are, end-to-end payments that are instant and usually large value, and then faster payments that we might. That's a newer system, mm-hmm. relatively, but also very exciting in its development. So. And then, you know, you can spend pretty much years on every single one of those. getting into the depth. There's a lot of depth under every single one of those systems.
So what would constitute as a faster payment?
That's an excellent question. And there's some definitional differences around that. But in general, I would say that is a digital payment that is as effective as cash. So it's instant, it's real time. Now, the card is, you swipe or insert your debit card, and that's pretty instant as far as you're concerned, right? Because you got mm-hmm. to make that purchase. The merchant let you walk away with the goods. And so that sounds pretty instant. The merchant doesn't get their money instantly, but it's instant availability. So systems are evolving, and now there are payment systems called real-time or instant or immediate funds transfer, where both the sender, is debited instantly and the receiver gets their funds instantly. But these are very new systems, at least here in the United States. And I know, Michael, you told me that you have family from Nigeria. You live there a little bit. And Nigeria's actually had an instant payment system for at least a decade. So in that regard, they're, a decade ahead of the United States. We just got one about 2 years ago.
And is that Nigerian system, Elizabeth, is that InterSwitch?
Well, that's an interesting story, too. There's actually at least three instant payment systems in Nigeria. The one that most people refer to, called NIP, Nigeria Instant Payment, is run by a bank clearing house, which is called NIBS. So they run the ACH, the instant payments, the checks. But InterSwitch also has one as well that more or less runs in parallel to the one we were just talking about. Yeah.
I am just. I'm aware of InterSwitch mainly because of, Dr. Charles Afidi, who's here in Atlanta, who was, I know, instrumental in creating InterSwitch in Nigeria, and more so, and now, he's part of our community here in Atlanta, and he's just, a tremendous person, obviously got great depth and was a major contributor to the creation of that. So it's really, I'm always thinking of him and what he's done there.
Absolutely. So I had the opportunity to have, participate in several meetings with Charles in Nigeria earlier this year. And I still joke with him that you walk into a meeting with him and people start sitting up in their chairs. That's Charles. Wow. He's like a payments rock star.
Yeah, that's so
he commands the room.
He's a very unassuming, very modest person, which is what really, which is why I love hearing that story. It's really cool.
yeah. So, we've just gotten instant payments here in the United States, and it was, at least as far as our retail bank system, and that was launched in late 2019, and it's now rolling out to more and more financial institutions. But chances are, you haven't experienced it yet, Michael. I haven't in my financial institution, which is a smaller one. And that's one of the challenges, and it's a challenge as well as an opportunity of these big network systems, because it takes a long time for banks and credit unions to update their systems and then to commercialize a product out to their customer. But when that happens, it usually has a lot of stickiness. It doesn't go away for decades, in fact. So those are open loop payment systems, meaning that, all the financial institutions come into this. And there's also closed loop payment systems, maybe PayPal would be one that you would know. And that means that PayPal basically has the relationship with both the sender and the receiver, rather than, a financial institution being in between that relationship. And they have advantages. They can more easily make product changes and roll them out much more quickly than, say, these open loop network systems.
Because they all go through your system.
Because they basically control all aspects of it. But they're small.
That makes sense.
So there are trade-offs.
Elizabeth, I wanted to talk a little bit more about Africa and payments, and then maybe we could touch on Latin America as well. The, one thing, I guess a couple ideas. One is a question I've wondered is the evolution of payments or payment systems in Africa, is there anything similar to what's happened in developing parts of the world with regards to telecom, where, we'll hear these conversations about there was this big leapfrog relative to what happened in the United States, where the economies just in telecom went straight to mobile and went to remarkable kind of mobile delivery of telecom. And I've wondered, is there a similar type of evolution that's occurred with payments in that regard or not? And then I saw too that Jack Dorsey, the founder of Square, the founder of Twitter, was spending a lot of time in Africa back in the first quarter of this year. He was even suggesting that he might move to Africa for a period of time because he sees such a tremendous opportunity there related to payments. And I was just wanted to hear your thoughts around that continent, in particular with payments evolution.
The transformation going on in Africa right now, payments-wise, is truly fundamental. And I think that there's exciting developments there, but of course, it still hasn't reached everybody. So there's plenty of opportunity to improve this, and that's some of the things that Glenbrook Partners gets to work on in our consulting business. But if you look at telco-based payments, most of these telecommunications companies, they have to become different companies in order to offer payments. So they become mobile money operators at that point. They're not telcos per se, and they get licensed and they're able to offer low-cost payments to people, and most of the time they already have sort of a ready-made potential customer base from their telco business, so they're close to the people, and that makes them very effective, is being able to offer digital payment to lots of people. They don't have to go out and recruit all their customers from the beginning. Mm-hmm. And that has been tremendously successful in East Africa. It's had, you know, some decent success in other parts of Africa, but nowhere as much as in Kenya, and the phenomenal success of Safaricom.
Right. And that's, I think, of Kenya and M-Pesa.
Yeah, and Safaricom is the company that offers M-Pesa.
I see.
Yes, and they've done phenomenally well. They've tried their model elsewhere. It hasn't always stuck, but I think there's enough promise there that they're certainly keeping at it. And, you know, Nigeria, I think that it starts with an advanced payment system, but in a it's of a different character, if you will. It's much more bank-based in Nigeria. The mobile money like M-Pesa has not really caught on in the same way that it has in East Africa. But I think a lot of companies, you know, I'm sure the Square as well as many VCs are interested in Nigeria because of the vast, you know, the very large population. And even though the country has an advanced payment system today, it really doesn't serve the whole population. And that's a big problem and a big challenge to be solved, right? So basically only about 60-65% even of the population have a formal bank account in Nigeria today.
Wow.
Yeah.
We have a fintech startup company at Georgia Tech in the Advanced Technology Development Center, ATDC, called Yellow Card, founded by Chris Maurice is the CEO founder. And although he's started the company here at Georgia Tech and ATDC, the value prop is focused on Nigeria. And he has signed up over 15,000 merchants in Lagos. And it's a payments play, but it's really about getting into Bitcoin cryptocurrency. So you go in and you're able to convert as a Nigerian, convert Naira into Bitcoin at the merchant location. And then folks want to do that. If I'm hearing, I've heard Chris right, they want to do that because they're looking for a lower cost way to move value cross border, which they can do on with the Bitcoin currency. But then he's at times also suggested that folks would do this conversion into Bitcoin, even with the volatility that Bitcoin has, because that volatility is actually less than the volatility of Naira, which is a little hard for me to believe looking at, you know, how volatile Bitcoin is. But anyway, it's kind of, you know, I think it's cool because we've got this kind of startup that's coming here out of Atlanta, and they've chosen to, you know, focus their entire efforts on Nigeria, and that part of Africa is expanding into, I think, Uganda and a few of the other countries that are close by.
That's really cool. Mm-hmm. So in your opinion, who are kind of the big players that we should look out for?
I'm sorry, Michael, I interrupted you. What did you say?
I'm sorry, I interrupted you. All right, so my question was, in your opinion, and this is to both of you guys, who are some of the big players that we have to look out for that we kind of don't know about yet?
Big players from a payment standpoint.
From a payment standpoint.
I don't know if there's any big players that you might not have heard about if you're, you know, following the payments press. But there are a number of, if you will, up and coming, spaces. And one of them is, you know, how do we use existing, you know, internet, like, you know, you probably use WhatsApp, I bet. I mean, I'm a big user of it. And,
love WhatsApp.
You know, yeah. So everybody already has WhatsApp on their phone around the world. So one of the concepts is to use it to also transfer funds, right? You know, transfer between friends, also make payments at merchants, that sort of thing. And that's right. Something that Facebook, since it bought WhatsApp, has been working on for several years. And they, everyone thought that they were going to first launch in India. But surprise, surprise, earlier this week, they launched in Brazil, which is also another very interesting payments market.
Yeah, Brazil's that's a good call out. And Brazil, I mean, Latin America overall, of course, but Brazil's been, has got some meaningful ties here to Georgia. There's Merchant eSolutions, which is out of Brazil, but keeps their U.S. headquarters here in Atlanta. And then Fleetcor, Atlanta company, has, I think, over 10%, it's 10, I think, to 15% of their top line revenue comes out of Brazil. I think they handle all of the toll payment for around transportation are handled by Fleetcor. And then there's a variety of other capabilities they have there as well. But that, it's been a pretty dramatic week, right, with this WhatsApp launch in Brazil. Talk a bit about what's happened, Elizabeth.
Yeah, Brazil's an interesting case on that number of levels. And, you know, we've all had our worlds rocked by some effect of, you know, COVID, even if we haven't been gotten sick, right? But it's changed all of our lives, and COVID is certainly having an effect in Brazil, too. So there's a very competitive marketplace in Brazil already. They're bigger users of cards than most other developing countries. They've also had a pretty, you know, an electronic payment system, so digital, for 20, 30 years now. I'm sort of giving you some background here. The system gets to be about 30 years old. It needs to be renovated. And the reason it did so much so early in Brazil is because of hyperinflation. And when you have a hyperinflation environment, you want to be able to move your money quickly, because the time value of money in a inflationary environment is more precious than at any other time. So you want to spend it before it loses value. So they've been digital for a long time, but now it's time to, you know, renovate that system. And the central bank there is working towards launching a new replacement instant payment system in November. So that's in the background. Maybe that was one of the motivations to get into the market early for Facebook.
Right.
And that was possibly why they wanted to launch WhatsApp there as a pay function. So, you know, more quickly, of course, not privy to their corporate strategies, but it's a big market period. And then we also have just everyone, you know, needing to make more digital payments. And I was just talking with Tommy earlier that it's amazing what Brazil has been able to do with social disbursements. They needed to send, around COVID, right? So a lot of families were not able to work, and they needed some emergency assistance, just like we did here with the CARES Act, right? People needed some funds to tide them over till they could get back to work. And the Brazilian government has opened up about 41 million accounts since February. Wow. 41 million accounts to disperse these funds. And of course, most of those folks did not have any account before, or they would have been able to receive it digitally otherwise. So this is a very, if you will, hot market for payments in general. A lot of companies, PayPal's big there. I think Income is also in Brazil, another big Atlanta company. So, you know, FaceApp, excuse me, WhatsApp.
Okay. Yeah. It's almost Friday. It's okay.
I'm going to stop talking. WhatsApp Pay comes into the market and all this going on, and they're in the market for about 24, 36 hours, and the central bank tells them that they need to stop. And that the companies that are making this available need to, if you will, cease the payment function until they go through a regulatory licensing process. And this is one of the, I think, I'll call it interesting or fascinating aspects of what's going on, that, you know, WhatsApp is not actually processing the payment on the app. It's going over, they're accepting, debit cards from certain financial institutions. Right. So Visa, MasterCard, Brazil has its own card network called Elo, which is, related to Merchants eSolutions here. And they told those companies to stop processing those payments. So the Brazilian government is basically asking a question, which a lot of regulators around the world are, is who's the payment provider here? Who do I regulate? Mm-hmm. And it appears that they're asking Facebook or WhatsApp to now get a license. That is what we're reading in the news stories, at least. So,
right.
Interesting regulatory intersection.
Yeah. As we begin to wrap up, I wanted to just hear from each of you any big fintech news that's caught your attention in the past week. How about you, Michael? What's hit your radar?
So I think the biggest one to hit my radar by far was the Wirecard story, the 2 billion euro fraud. I thought that was insane.
Yeah, that one, it's been hard to read or hear about or even follow as someone who's kind of been part of this fintech industry for years and years and years, because it's a bit of a black eye, because this was a huge fintech payments provider out of Germany. At one point, their market cap was larger than Deutsche Bank. Audit was done, $2 billion missing. And just in the past week, the CEO has resigned. He's been arrested. And I think last night they filed for bankruptcy. So it's been tough to read. What about you, Elizabeth? Any big news?
Well, the WhatsApp story out of Brazil, I think, is the biggest one. And, the opportunity to get that right is so pressing. You know, I hope that they figure that out and can move forward and get back in the market. There's already other players in the Brazilian market that are offering some digital payment services over WhatsApp, but they've also taken out their own license. So, is Facebook the channel or the payment system? I think that's the question for them to figure out.
Yeah. That's going to be interesting to see how that transpires. The only other bits a few other items that caught my eye. One was PayPal and Venmo, same company, put out a press release that they were going to allow for cryptocurrency buying and selling, which I think is remarkable. And it's just another data point that cryptocurrency is starting to move into a maybe more acceptable, mature state in the system. So I was excited to see that. And then lastly, for those of you that have paid attention to nCino and the banking cloud-based banking platform built on Salesforce, they filed an S-1, meaning they're going to be doing an IPO at some time in the near future. which is of course a big step in the evolution of in that fintech company. Well, thank you both for being part of this podcast. It is great to have you both as friends to the Georgia FinTech Academy. Michael, look forward to spending more time with you, working with you over the coming months. And Elizabeth, I hope you will come back. We have several events we want to pull you into in the fall. So
yeah, it's going to be fun.
Telling you about those.
Well, great to meet you, Michael, and it'd be awesome if you took some of those, engineering skills and applied them to the payment space. There's a lot of exciting opportunity here for you.
I think I need to repay the systems in the U.S. first, but I definitely will.
The Georgia FinTech Academy podcasts are available on iTunes and Spotify. To obtain additional information about the Georgia FinTech Academy, please visit our website at georgiafintechacademy.org.